The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
According to a Forbes 2024 article, a woman's standard of living can drop by up to 45% after divorce, compared to 21% for a man. That means women face incredible adversity when faced with separation and many risk losing their homes. But it doesn't have to be that way if you lean on professionals like my next guest. So I am Beth Allen, your host, DIY educator, contractor, and DIY expert. And welcome back to The Empowered Homeowner. Today, I have a very special guest in studio, and she is Mariana Goldenberg. Mariana is the founder and CEO of Curo Wealth Management in Newtown, Bucks County. She is an expert who focuses on women's finances as a certified divorce financial analyst. And she has so much to share on how women can protect homeownership and the process of marriage, divorce, and distribution of assets. So, Mariana, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
So, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to follow this path in specializing on women?
That's a great question. So, as you said, I'm a founder and CEO of Curo Wealth Management. We are a very unique financial planning firm. The reason we are unique is because we are owned and operated by women.
That's what I love. You've got such an all-girl crew over there.
And I do. It's girls' power. And I try to live every day by this phrase, behind every successful woman, there is a tribe of other women that have her back. That's something that energizes me every day, and that's what we practice in the office and outside the office with our clients. So your question to me was, well, how did I come up with this? How did I become a financial planner, a CDFA for women? And the story, I'm going to make it real short, but 15 years ago, and I've been a financial planner for 30 years, 15 years ago or so, a client was referred to me. It was a woman who just went through divorce. She was a stay-at-home mom, highly educated, but stay-at-home mom with two children. One of them had some special needs, and she was unexpectedly getting divorced. And it was 2007. She loved her house. She put a lot of thought, it was a stronghold. That's where her kids were brought up, raised. That was her
home
anchor.
Home is the center of life, yeah.
And she really wanted to keep the house as part of the divorce process. Well, when she came to me, she already signed her divorce decree. And basically what it stated is she keeps the house that had a mortgage on it, and she gave away a full pension of her ex-husband that was a lifelong pension from a large pharmaceutical company. And my first reaction when I read this was, who let you sign it? This is so wrong. The reason I had such a reaction is there were many reasons, but if you recall, I said the year 2007, 2008, the prices dropped, right? So this poor woman that had to go back to work, so she had no income to refinance the house in her own name. She didn't have enough income to pay the mortgage, and she couldn't even sell it because the prices had dropped dramatically.
So she had a home, but it really didn't have the equity that she needed to sustain herself.
Correct. So we really had to get really creative on how to allow her to stay in the house and be able to pay it. 15 years later, you know, we always joke with her, she was my inspiration I realized at that point that you need to be in the beginning of that process, to be an advocate for a woman, to make sure she doesn't sign that she doesn't fully understand or can really work with after divorce is finalized. So that's when I went and I researched different designations, and I found this certified divorce financial analyst designation that really spoke to me. I took the classes, I passed the exam, and I've been practicing ever since.
Well, that's fantastic. There are so many women, I think, who need to know these basics that can make or break their situation in terms of losing their home.
Yeah.
And for many women, you know, home is, it is everything. It's where we've held those family dinners. It's where we've raised our children. It's where we've had those birthday parties, you know, for our one-year-old. And over the years, the attachment can be so deep. But like you said, our wealth and our future is so dependent on our property and the equity. And if you give, you know, so much of that equity stake away in that divorce, you've really screwed yourself over. And how can women advocate, you know? So here's a more specific. Before we talk numbers, can you address what is the emotional aspect of this homeownership journey that you have to navigate some women through?
Yeah. As you rightfully said, it's a part of us. We put our heart and soul to make it a home, not just a house. And no decision, financial or different decisions, but especially financial, should be made during the emotional state of divorce. Because more, you know, 10 out of, or 9 out of 10 times, it's going to be the wrong decision. So you need to align yourself with someone who can advocate and help you lay out different pros and cons of keeping the house so you can make the decision that you're not going to regret 5, 10, or 15 years from now. Because when divorce process is happening, everybody's looking at today's state. Nobody's thinking, what is 20 years from now when I want to retire? And I just gave away my pension, like in the case of my client. Or what if I lose the job? And when we originally bought the house, we were counting on 2 salaries. Now I depend on my own. What about an emergency? Things happen. You need to change the roof. You have a water heater that just broke down and flooded the basement. Do you have enough money set up aside to be able to fix that and not jeopardize your lifestyle?
Right. So having someone like you can guide them through separating out the heart so that you can focus on the future financial security. And even though as much as we are attached to that property, sometimes we have to let go to make sure that we're in it for the long haul safely. And
you nailed it.
Yeah.
And no pun intended. But it's the emotional part. A big chunk of what we do as financial planners, and a lot of time people hear very standard, you know, we help people reach their financial goals. We help them build a plan. Yes, that's all part of it. But another big part of what we do is the emotional separation of, it's really emotion separation of what needs to be done to have you secure financially versus what really, you know, you do.
Okay. What are some steps that women could take early in their marriage to protect their stake in homeownership?
Yep. It's a great question. And the reason it is a great question is because when someone is getting married, it's really exciting part of their life, right? They're starting a journey together. They're building a life together. And more often than not, the first part of that journey is to buy a house. Now, in the early days, when people bought the house, they usually got married in their early 20s, and they usually didn't have much money, so they've put whatever they had together and bought the house. So everything they've put into the house was part of their marital estate. In today's day and age, people get married much later in life, in their 30s or sometimes 40s. So they already built their nest egg separately. And I see a lot of it when people buy a house together, they don't think of what and that's not part of getting married, you know, thing. You don't think, what if we have to go a separate way? How do we unravel what we just put together?
Right.
And the money that you put in a house, let's say you got a big inheritance and you used it to on the down payment on the house, or the money that you might have sold your own house and moved in with your significant other. The best part of the advice that I can give is three things. The first one, keep good records. Have, you know, have it written down and know exactly what you've put in and when you put in. As you do renovations or improvements, if you use separate funds, keep a good record of that, because all that is in as part of divorce, you can separate it as a marital versus the personal property, and you can pull some of this money back as not marital funds subject to divorce or subject to
equitable distribution. So you're saying if you put on a $75,000 addition, you can allocate that as this was something that we shared, or my more of my money went to.
Correct.
But just by keeping those good records.
Correct. And I also tell people, you know, prenup is not something, although it, you know, in today's day and age, it's quite more often, right, than it used to be. But it's really good practice for people to sit down, separate the emotions and excitement of the big day, and sit down and figure out a plan. Have it in writing, something when you're still in love, when you still have positive emotions, something you both agree to. Because over 30 years that I've been doing this, I have seen what money do to people in situations of divorce or remarriage or death. So it's really good to be in a positive note and put together a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. We all know money can bring out the dark side.
And it does.
And if you're talking about money in that dark moment, when you're also talking about where am I going to live? Where are my children going to live? How am I going to pay for my kids' education? Because I was planning on using this house as equity for tuition. And now, wow, I have to give up my house, or I have to now take on that mortgage. And it's so complicated.
You know what else is even more complicated today than it was 2 years ago? When people divided the house as part of divorce, what usually happens if it's joint ownership, what it means is that the person who keeps the house has to refinance in their own name, and they have to change a deed on the house. So you have an asset and a liability that match up. Well, what did we have a couple of years ago? We had very low interest rates. That was not an issue. You know, you had a house at 3% and you refinance at 3%, 3.5%, not an issue. In today's day and age, somebody has to refinance at 6.5 or 7. Your payment just doubled up.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
Yeah. And I don't think people understand the long-term hit that takes on the long-term wealth.
Exactly.
That they're trying to build.
Yep.
Yeah. That's an important piece. What are some of the biggest financial mistakes that you have seen women make in that divorce process?
Well, I think leading the divorce process emotionally, as I said before, creates the biggest mistake. It's really hard to step away from emotions and look at something just, you know, clear mind and financially. So the mistake is done, there are a couple of mistakes, but the first one is people don't understand the tax and long-term ramifications of taking some part of this of the marital estate versus the other. For example, same house we just talked about. Somebody really wants to keep the house. What they forget sometimes is that down the road, when you sell the house, there could be a capital gain. The capital gain on the property that's owned jointly is you don't pay any tax below $500,000. Anything above $500,000 is taxable. So most people fall within that category jointly. Once you sell the house, once you keep the house, you still keep the same cost basis, the same amount of money that you've paid for it. But now, since you're the only owner, you're individual, your exclusion goes down from $500,000 to $250,000. So,
wow.
Right?
Okay, so they're paying tax on the 250 and above.
Correct.
Because they're single.
Yeah. And nobody thinks about it in a throes of divorce.
So now they're paying the capital gains tax on the 250, 400, whatever it is above that price tag.
Yep.
Wow.
So that's the biggest, especially in today's day and age when prices of houses skyrocketed. So you have, just quick example, let's say your house was $1 million, just to have a round number, and your cost on the house, how much you purchased, is $400,000. So you have $600,000 capital gain. If you were to sell this house as a married couple, the first $500,000 of that would have been tax-free. Only $100,000 right. would be taxable. Now, you kept that house as a single individual. You still have the same cost basis.
Wow.
And now your capital gain is from $400,000 to $1 million, which is same $600,000.
Right.
But only the first 250 is tax-free.
Right. And that's a lot of change.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And you also pay for all the cost of selling and so forth.
Wow.
So.
That's a lot to swallow.
It is.
Yeah. Well, Marianna, let's pause for a minute. I want to do a shout out to our nonprofit partner, FP Monco, who is making sure homeownership is more attainable. On any given day, over 500 people in Montgomery County, PA, are experiencing homelessness. Nearly 60,000 people don't have enough nutritious food to eat, and 8,600 families have income below the federal poverty line. Family Promise Monco PA is doing something about that by partnering with the community to address homelessness and hunger, one family at a time. FP Monco is able to support families through an emergency shelter, transitional housing, and a food pantry. If you'd like to learn more on how to get involved, you can visit fpmonco.org. Welcome back. Marianna, one of the things that always comes into, you know, the divorce aspect of finances is credit. And, you know, credit debt and how much does a family have in terms of that credit debt, and how do you split it up, and how does a woman improve her credit score so maybe she can go get another mortgage and, yep. and start fresh?
Yep. That's a great question as well, because a lot of times when people start the divorce process, they do a lot of things that are very specific and very well adopted, like they go and hire an attorney. They start gathering information on their joint assets, on pensions, on retirement accounts. One thing that I highly recommend for people to do as well during this process, if they haven't done it before, is to run their credit report. It's been a bunch of years now that the federal government mandated for all three credit report agencies to allow you run a credit report on an annual basis free of charge. So one of the recommendations I tell people to do is use one agency at a time, and this way you can run your credit report every 4 months and have it free.
Wow, wow. Right? And if you're in a stable situation, that may not be as important, but in the process of divorce, things can be fluctuating a lot as accounts are closed or...
Correct.
Wow, that's a brilliant idea.
Yep, so you do that, and that's another reason for doing this is to make sure that each spouse is being truthful and disclosing not only their assets, but they're also their debts. Because if you have an adversarial situation and a spouse has a spending problem, they could really rack up the credit debt, credit card, or any other debt, maybe gambling debt. And so if that debt has been accumulated during marriage, it becomes part of marital estate. And all of a sudden, if you're a very shrewd homeowner and financially sound, all of a sudden you realize that you have a couple hundred thousand of gambling or credit card debt that your spouse accumulated during marriage that you had no idea about.
Wow, that is a real shocker.
It's unbelievable what people do and realize they don't do.
Right.
So even if you have a good marriage, it's still good practice for people to run their credit report. In today's day and age, even because there's all the scammers and hackers, and you just saw one a couple of days ago for Social Security numbers through the agency called NPI. So it's a good practice no matter what, but especially during divorce situation.
Wow. That is golden advice.
Yeah. And the other one, too, is when people married for a long time, 20, 30 years, and they opened credit cards together, joint accounts, joint names, they tend to forget, especially if something has been used for a bunch of years. A way to have a clean break, you really have to look at every single card out there and either close or remove the joint card holder on a credit card. So there is never a situation down the road when somebody used the spouse's or ex-spouse's credit card.
Wow. I've often heard of some stories where women have discovered that they were never even put as co-owner of things, whether it's property or, you know, a boat or something like that. What can women do to prevent this?
And I'm assuming since they are the owners, there is also a debt and a liability on the side, right? So it could be that the debt was taken out in a joint name, a loan for a boat or a mortgage, mm-hmm. but the asset has been just done in the spouse's individual name. And a lot of times, especially if you've been married for a long time, you just trust your spouse and just sign where it is, and you don't look at it
right
until the time comes. So my biggest, the advice that I can give, especially to younger women that are just starting their life together and a journey, don't be an innocent bystander. After all said and done, it's on you. You have to be part of the process. You might not do it on a daily basis, but it's really good practice to sit down maybe once a month, a month, a quarter, look at the family budget, look at your debts, look at your liabilities, make sure you understand what is happening. And if you ever have to be on the other side of this, you're aware. You're an educated consumer and can take care of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I've started this whole radio show, is that I want to make sure that people are empowered and aware. Because if you don't know that your name is not on the deed to a car,
yep,
or the deed to a second property, or like you said, even a boat, like your husband hands you the papers and says, here, sign, we're taking a loan for this boat, but he didn't put your name on the title.
Correct.
Then you're paying for it, but you have no right to it in an asset distribution. And that's on you because you signed something without paying attention.
Exactly.
So you have to be your own advocate. You have to ask questions. When a woman is preparing, I won't even say preparing, if you start to have that gut feeling that your marriage isn't doing well and it's not going to last, what are some things that you want to see women doing early on before there's a paper on the table with an uncomfortable conversation?
The gut reaction for anyone is to put your head in the sand. Get into bed, cover yourself with a blanket, and
drink some wine.
That's always a good idea. And it's okay. It's a normal reaction. This is part of the process, part of the grieving, because your marriage is coming to an end. There's nothing wrong with it. Acknowledge the feeling, be with the feeling, and let yourself go through it. Then once you feel a little bit more empowered, then when you start the process, because you need to separate that emotion and you need to separate the reality, right? So the first thing you want to do is start taking the inventory of what it is that you own, all your assets, all your liabilities. Collect the documents, gather, financial statements. Don't be, as I said, an innocent bystander. You need to be in control. You align yourself with people that you're going to advocate for you, but at the end of the day, you have to be your number one cheerleader and advocate.
So should a woman be gathering those documents, photocopying them, and, you know, maybe emailing them to themselves or to a trusted family member that can keep them?
Yes.
Okay.
And the good idea is to open a new email. You don't want to use an email that's known.
Right.
So you want to start a new email address. You can email it to yourself. You can make photocopies and keep the files at your friend's house, somewhere where you have a quick access to, but it's not
known that you are covertly maybe looking into what your assets are that
Correct.
Way. Okay. Because it can be tricky emotionally and you know, tiptoeing around one another and figuring that piece out. And one question I have is, what can they do in terms of the market changing and the home ownership? Like, you know, things are moving so fast with home prices. Is there any little trick to navigating some of that in the divorce process? Like, what its value is now versus what it might be in the future?
Yeah, and usually divorce, for most part, is not a very quick process, unfortunately. The courts are backed up, you know, the time it takes to file and reconcile. And then if you have adversarial divorce, it takes time to go back and forth. So it could be, you know, years before you get divorced. I have clients now who have been doing it for 4 years, for seven. So there is quite a change in the price. And the date of separation is really dictating that stake in the ground.
Okay, good to know.
It's really important to know. So the growth in the value of the house is something that would be addressed during the divorce decree. So if you are the one staying in the house, the growth would not just be part of that. It has to be split up between two houses. So the date of separation, it's one of the key dates in a divorce, and it's better for both spouses to agree to it.
To that date
and have it pretty written, you know, and have it written down. Because as I said, it could take 4 and 7 years.
That's a lot.
And you can forget.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Mariana, where can people find you?
Well, the first thing is I am on all social media circuits out there. We have an amazing website because we personally put it together. It has our soul, our identity, our services on it.
And it's curewealthmanagement.com.
Yep.
Perfect.
www.curewm is the handle.
.com. Well, I am delighted to have you here. And for all the ladies out there, remember that doing it yourself doesn't mean doing it alone. And you have resources like Mariana Goldenberg and Curo available to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.